We don't know exactly where the character known as Don Juan comes from, but in most versions of the story, we do know where he goes, to hell. Well, in his unfinished version of the story, Lord Byron was going to have Don Juan end up in hell or married. He thought they were pretty much the same thing. And the opera that Mozart wrote with librettist Lorenzo da Ponte is, in a way, even more ambiguous. Is it tragedy or comedy? And what about this business of a statue coming to life and wreaking revenge? I'm Norman Gilliland.
And I'm Emily Auerbach. This is University of the Year.
What did Don Giovanni's first audiences think of it? Why did an early reviewer, and some singers since, consider it so difficult to perform? And what kind of special effects are required to bring it to the stage? Our guests are Joe Mekovich and Elise Sandel, the conductor and stage director, respectively, of the Madison Opera production, which will be performed on April 26th and 28th at the Overture Center in Madison.
And welcome to University of the Year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me start with a really general question, which is, if someone has never seen Don Giovanni by Mozart, never seen this opera, what would they miss? What would they have missed out on?
Well, it's, you know, opera is the union of music and drama. It is very theatrical. And this piece is truly at a point in opera history in the genre where those two elements are really starting to combine, with the wonderful text by Lorenzo da Ponte, who himself is a figure that we could discuss for hours
a little
and hours
bit
and hours.
Giovanni
absolutely.
Himself.
He was born a Jewish family and then became a Catholic priest and ended up teaching Italian literature at Columbia University in New York. And you know, when you look at that history. Anyway, I digress.
Didn't he get kicked out of being a priest?
Yes, he did. He was
morals
absolutely mm-hmm. shame on those Italians.
Bad boy.
Came to New York because he was in debt.
Yep.
So he skipped Europe and came to the New York.
That's right. As a grocer and started the an opera company in New York City.
He had a bookstore too, yeah?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, as long as we're digressing, but it's all fun. The person who got him the job at what was then Columbia College was Clement Clark Moore.
Correct.
Who wrote, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas."
Yep.
So colorful characters call for a colorful opera.
That's right. And the story has themes that are, you know, it's the Don Juan myth, which has been, you know, ingrained in literature for hundreds of years. So that itself speaks to us. And the glorious music of Mozart and how he paces this story.
You know, one of my favorite things about this opera is just this character of Don Giovanni. If you don't see the opera, you miss the opportunity to be seduced by sort of one of the greatest star characters of all time. We love going to the movies and being seduced by the movie stars and our favorite movie characters. And that's the experience you get here when you come to see Don Giovanni. You get to be seduced by this ultimate bad boy in a guilt-free way.
Well, and guilt-free for him. Too. I mean, that's part of the guilty appeal of the character is that he has no scruples, he has no regrets, and he just never stops.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
You know, when this premiered in 1787, there was sort of a social trend in Europe of gentlemen who were sort of pursuing this idea of anything goes, it's all about me, you know, the true libertine. And that itself in the late part of the 18th century, why this was so popular, that this novella by, a little libretto by da Ponte.
Before we hear the catalog song that we learn how many conquests Don Giovanni has, can you give us the plot leading up to that?
Leading up to that, well, the opera opens up on Don Giovanni's servant, Leporello, who is really his right-hand man, complaining about having to follow him around on all of his amorous conquests, as it were, and then bursts onto the scene. The first voice we hear after Leporello is Donna chasing Don Giovanni. And she says, if you don't kill me, I'm never letting you get away. So Don Giovanni has tried to have his way with Donna, and Mozart and da Ponte specifically leave it very vague as to what happens
what
inside
happens.
The bedroom
yep.
up there. And so Donna is pursuing him, and finally her, just as Don Giovanni is about to overcome her. Her father happens onto the scene, and there's a great duel, and it doesn't go well for the father, the Commendatore, and he ends up dead at the end, and Giovanni and Leporello run away. And then Donnana comes back with her fiancé, and they discover her dead father, and she implores her fiancé to avenge this death.
Don Ottavio.
Don Ottavio, yeah. That's right. And so, you know, at this point, they don't know that it's Don Giovanni who did the killing. He was masked when he entered Donnana's room. And so they're off to look for the killer and seek vengeance. And then we see Don Giovanni and Leporello again, and they happen to see a beautiful woman in the distance, and she's very upset, and they're not sure exactly who it is. It turns out it's Don Elvira, who Don Giovanni had a little, well, his word would be a fling. Her word would be a marriage that lasted all of 3 days. And so now, with this catalog aria, Leporello's about to tell Don Elvira the truth about Don Giovanni, in that he gets around.
Well, there's actually specific numbers in here, too.
And it's yes.
I had to wonder, before we get into the actual aria, I had to wonder if there's not some kind of a joke here in terms of these exaggerated numbers of Don Giovanni's conquest, because it ranges from 91 in Turkey and, mm-hmm. and a few more than that in France. And in
640 in Italy.
In Italy, but in Spain it's 1,003. Mm-hmm. Is he making some kind of comment about national character here?
Oh, that very well could be. Only 100 in France, 231 in Germany. Mm-hmm.
And so what's our total number?
I think we added it up. It's 2,039.
Yeah.
And here they are, the catalog aria.
Madamina, il catalogo è questo, delle belle chiamò il padron mio, un catalogo egli è che ho fatto io. Osservate, leggete con me, osservate, leggete con me. In Italia 640, in La Magna 231, 100 in Francia, in Turchia 91, ma in Spagna, ma in Spagna son già 1,003, 1,003, 1,003. Fra queste contadine, cameriere cittadine, von contesse baronesse, marchesane principesse, e quant'onne d'ogni grado, d'ogni forma, d'ogni età, d'ogni forma, d'ogni età. In Italia 640, in La Magna 231, cioè in Francia, in Turchia, 91, ma in Spagna, ma in Spagna son già 1,003, 1,003, 1,003, ma fra queste contadine, cameriere, cittadine, ma contesse, baronesse, marchesane, principesse,
Leporello cataloging, literally cataloging, the amorous conquests of his master Don Giovanni, as sung there by Alessandro Corbell. I don't think there's anything else quite like this on opera, is there?
No, and it gets slimy. It's not just that it's mm-hmm. just numbers. He just talks about what type of women Don Giovanni seduces, their ages.
He likes to do it with the old ones just so we can put them on the list.
Can, for those of us not fluent in Italian. Can you give us a little bit of a translation of what we just heard and also explain how you're handling subtitles in your own production here in Madison?
Well, there will be subtitles projected above the stage, as they do, I think, for all of their productions at Madison Opera now. So no matter what language the opera is in, you'll get a sense of what they're saying. Let's see. He starts out talking about how he made the catalog himself, Leporello, and then he lists all the numbers. So he says there are, what did we say, 80 in Turkey, 640 in Italy, 231 in Germany, 100 in France, and of course, he says 1,000 in Spain, mille tres, which is quite a number, as you can imagine. And we've decided these numbers are true, that he's probably in the last few years been seeing one or two women a day. And then he talks about, he lists sort of the different types of women. There are debutantes, there are country girls, there are marquesas, yes. There are, we've been joking in rehearsal, it's like there are Supreme Court justices and waitresses and Olympian athletes and movie stars.
Any sense of the motivation behind this, assemblage of a huge list? Is it a braggadocio thing? Are we meant to view him as an addict?
Well, of course, it's the servant that's spilling the list here. Right. So this is his commentary.
And there's something about this list, too. You know, Don Giovanni knows now that Leporello has this list, if he didn't know Leporello had it when he first started it. And I think he enjoys seeing the list increase as well. The way we're doing this Don Giovanni is, it's really sort of one man's accelerated path to self-destruction over the course of 24 hours. But it started from this place of him not being able to be alone and not being able to be without a new conquest or a new adventure or a new adrenaline rush from a new woman. So it's that sort of, he can't sit still and just be by himself. It's a sort of existential dread, I like to think of it.
This opera has a subtitle.
Ah, yes.
Is it something to the effect of not the rake goes to hell, but
basically, that's basically
the whole dissoluto punito.
There it is.
Literally the punishment of the dissolute, which makes me wonder, and it's kind of a comic title in a way. I mean, it's spilling the whole plot right away. It's like here's an execution. Everybody come and watch.
Right, right. You know, the inherent in that is, you know, this is a great time to bring up the difference between drama giocoso and then opera buffa.
Mm-hmm.
These are two Italian terms that distinguish what this piece is about, and there are definitely some comic elements in Don Giovanni. In this very serious and morally degrading story, there are some comic elements to lighten it up a little bit, but it is that balance that are inherent in those two. The drama giocoso, especially, is what Da Ponte called it. Mozart cataloged it as an opera buffa, but I think Da Ponte's correct.
So tell us the difference between those two and how the death of the father would fit in.
Well, I mean, the death of the father is pretty tragic. If somebody showed up, entered your bedroom, tried to rape you, and then got into a fight with one of your relatives and killed them with no warning to you at all, that would be pretty tragic and pretty awful. And so Mozart and Da Ponte put together these sort of, for lack of a better word, tiers of characters. So we have these noble characters of Don Nanna and Don Ottavio, and Elvira falls just a little bit in the middle, although she's technically a noble as well. These different sort of tiers of characters offer different emotional experiences, but the emotional depth that Don Nanna and Don Ottavio are going through in her dealing with the death of her father and this young man, her fiancé, trying to do what's best for her and trying to do what's right for her and what's right for everyone around him. He's almost the opposite of Don Giovanni in a way, because he's trying to do what he thinks he's supposed to do, and Don Giovanni does just exactly what he wants. So those two emotional levels offer one thing, and then we have the comments of the servant, who's this sort of lower class character, along with a couple of peasants we're about to meet in our little story, Mazzetto and Serlina. They offer different comment on how Don Giovanni affects people and a different comment on relationships and so on and so forth. So having those elements makes this balance mm-hmm. of tragedy and hilarity that sort of adds up
Absolutely.
To a drama giocoso.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Zerlina, the peasant girl.
Well, we're playing her not as a country bumpkin in any mm-hmm. way. I mean, she's a fully empowered woman
mm-hmm.
Who sees opportunities.
She's a little bit sassy. She, you know, it's very easy to play these peasant characters as just sort of stupid and
right.
that Don Giovanni takes advantage of them. And our Zerlina is really... She sees an opportunity to maybe better her quality of life for herself and maybe even her husband, Mazzetto, mm-hmm. by, you know, starting a liaison with Don Giovanni. And, you know, of course, it doesn't work out exactly as anybody planned, which
right.
is part of why this opera is fun. But she's a girl who kind of knows what she wants. And La Cidara in la Mano, which is this duet in which Don Giovanni, quote, seduces Zerlina. I think Don Giovanni might not be the only one doing the seducing
Absolutely.
Here.
Yeah.
There you have one of the most famous arias in all of opera, La Cidara in la Mano from Mozart's Don Giovanni. And we'll be hearing more about Don Giovanni and about Mozart and how it all comes together in this performance, upcoming set of performances by the Madison Opera. Right after this, you're listening to University of the Air. ¶¶ I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Emily Auerbach and our guest, Joe Omekovich and Elise Sandel, who are the conductor and the stage director of Mozart's Don Giovanni, as being performed April 26th and 28th at the Overture Center by Madison Opera. And by the way, we're hearing excerpts from Don Giovanni as performed by a cast that includes Boscovhus as Don Giovanni, also in the cast, Alessandro Corbell as Leporello, Christine Brewer as Donna Anna, Jerry Hadley as Don Ottavio, Felicity Lott as Donna Elvira, and as Zerlina, it's Nuccia Focile. And the orchestra is the Scottish Chamber Orchestra with Sir Charles Mackerras conducting. The opera, you could almost approach it in a kind of structural way, just by the various women that Don Giovanni seduces, mm-hmm. or attempts to seduce, and how they come from different classes and have different reactions and different motives. If we go back to the beginning, this vague abuse of Donna Anna, what kind of character is she?
Well, at this point, she's indignant after what's been done to her by Don Giovanni. And, of course, in the next excerpt, she'll have just realized that Don Giovanni is the murderer of her father. But she's a proud woman. She's a woman who feels her feelings strongly, but she's also a really strong woman. And she's not afraid to speak up for herself, and she's not afraid to ask for what's coming to the people who wrong her.
And what will she be saying in the aria that we're going to hear? The words that we'll hear, obviously, in Italian. What will she be saying?
Well, so this aria starts with "Or sai chi l'onore rapirà mi volse," which means, so now you know who wanted to take away my honor, because, of course, Don Giovanni tried to, or maybe even did, rape her. And then she asks her fiancé, Don Ottavio, to seek vengeance on Don Giovanni. And she recounts a little bit the experience of finding her father dead on the ground. And she says, la piaga, remember the wound, remember the blood covering the earth. And, you know, she uses that a little bit to spur on her own feelings of vengeance, but also to spur on the feelings of vengeance in her fiancé. The thing about being a woman in this time period is you're not allowed to go and avenge your own honor. You have to have a man to do it for you, which is frustrating. And she's really trying to get him to take care of this for her. But, of course, it's not as easy as it sounds to just go and avenge someone's honor. What do? Just off and kill them? Which is maybe one of the options left to Don Ottavio. So
this is her call for vengeance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
if we come to your production of Don Giovanni, obviously there will be a different singer singing this beautiful aria. What would we see? What's the visual dimension that gets added in terms of scenery, costumes, action on stage?
I mean, visually, this production is very, as you would call it, quote, traditional in terms of costume. It's set in the period that Mozart and De Ponte intended for it to be set. We have a gorgeous cast who are very good on stage. They're all incredible actors and incredibly intelligent. Our set is sort of appropriately vague in the way that it, I think it feeds into the period really well, but it's possible to make this set work in lots of different ways. And it's really great. It'll be great to light for mood in terms of the emotional lives of all of these characters. And it's very versatile in the way that it's got these elements that can symbolize lots of different places at the same time.
Right. I mean, it's not, what's great about this set and the way that it's going to work in the hall at the Overture Center is that it suggests the mood, like Elise just said, but which makes the characters pop, the acting pop, and the relationships pop, and all the hard work that we're doing in the rehearsal room pops out of that, because it's not a what we call sometimes in the business a furniture opera where it's all about what's on stage.
Yeah. So you, but you do have spectacular costumes. I mean, they have to be,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And the set's pretty impressive. Joe, as the conductor, how closely connected are you to what's actually going on stage? Do you have a monitor to tell, you know, these little adjustments in timing and this kind of thing?
I love conducting opera just for that reason, the difficulty in choreographing what's happening on stage and accompanying what in terms of the drama and the dramatic pace. You know, here I am to sit in the pit with the wonderful musicians in the pit, in this case, the Madison Symphony, and have our beautiful cast up on stage telling the story. And my job is to support and highlight and showcase the singer actors on stage and in the pit, and to also propel the story forward. I'm also playing the harpsichord in this production as well as conducting.
Mozart.
Absolutely, old school. So what attracts me as a theater conductor are these what you term almost difficulties, where a singer takes a little extra time,
right.
A high note is held on a little longer. That's what's thrilling to me to be a theater conductor. Are those?
You really have to breathe with what's going on.
You better be breathing, absolutely.
In this production, what are the moments where you know that the audience is waiting for them? The way in Hamlet, it's the to be or not to be speech. You know, what are the sort of highlights or key moments of this production?
Well, we've heard two excerpts that are two of the most famous excerpts of Don Giovanni, which is the catalog aria in La Ci Darem La Mano, the duet between Giovanni and Zerlina. I think a lot of people are waiting for Don Giovanni to go to hell.
They're waiting for this statue
of the Commendatore to show up to wreak vengeance on Don Giovanni. And so I think everybody, when the opening of that banquet scene at the finale of Act Two begins, I think everybody gets a little bit of a rush. And it's amazing the aggression of the music, the way that Mozart starts it and everything. Personally, it's one of my favorite moments, although I'm probably not a good person to ask because every day I have a different favorite.
I think the Body aria is another one that maybe people would point to.
It's a hit list. It really is. I mean, there's a lot of these arias and musical tunes throughout that you've heard in elevators and you hear constantly on public radio stations like this. And that's why Don Giovanni is, you know, one of the top 10 operas that are performed, because it's the story first, but then it's also the glorious way that Herr Mozart puts the text to music here.
And so what is Zerlina saying when she sings Bati Bati?
it's a hard translation, but I'm going to give it to Elise to do it.
So, you know, Zerlina has been seduced or almost seduced by Mazzetto. He is aware of this, and now she's trying to make up with Mazzetto. So they're sort of having their little tiff, and she's saying, please take me back. Please don't get mad. You can beat me up if you want, but I'll be here to kiss your hands and make it all better. So, you know, she's just saying, I'll be here on my knees just like a little lamb waiting for you. Just come back to me. So that's really the rough translation of Bhakti Bhakti. Some people feel like there are perhaps other innuendos in there about please beat me up. You can do with that information what you please.
But here she is. Well, it's a very pretty song considering what she's singing about. But it occurs to me that given what these various female characters go through in Don Giovanni, I'm surprised we don't have a mad scene in there. You know, you think of Donna Anna.
Oh, but we do.
Yeah, actually, the aria we played right before this one, Orsai Kimonore, really is practically a mad scene because she becomes so unhinged, reliving the experience of her father's death and asking for vengeance that it feels a little bit like a mad scene. But Don Elvira also has a little bit of a mad scene as well.
These two noble women, Don Elvira and Donna Anna, really transform, not so much in, for instance, what we just heard, the Orsai Kimonore, which is Donna Anna's aria. scenario. What happens right before that is something called recitativo accompagnato. There's two kinds of recitative. There's one that's accompanied by the harpsichord, which is secco, which propels it very quickly. And then there's a recitative that's accompanied by the orchestra. And the mad scene for Donna Anna happens really in this recitativo accompagnato, where the orchestra punctuates the drama and punctuates the emotion and actually helps to spur her next dramatic thought. It's really an inventive way of coming out of opera seria, which is a tradition, into more of a through-composed operatic form, which we're going for.
I guess the difference would be maybe that they come out of it, though. I mean, they don't stay mad.
I it depends on how you see it, but I mean, it's not the same as a Lucia mad scene or Ophelia's mad scene in Hamlet. You know, it's not that kind of a mad scene, but one of the, you know, all mad scenes are spurred by sort of an excess of emotion.
Sure.
And
yes.
So in lots of operas, you have moments where people dance on that line or almost tip over that line. And the emotional lives of these characters in this opera definitely indulge that in certain places, for sure.
And how does dance figure into this opera?
Well, absolutely. We're coming up to an excerpt that we're going to play from the first act finale, where Herr Mozart layers three different dance types on top of each other. Three different orchestras are coming from the pit, three different sounds, and you get something, a little cacophony at this party, this raucous, sexually energized, sensuous party that we're having on stage here in the 18th century. You have this amazing technique, which is very new and cutting edge in 1787. So this is an excerpt here from the finale number one.
Well, having three orchestras woven together like that, we can only imagine that the denouement of the plot is going to be similarly complex. And we'll find out how it plays out right after this. This is University of the Air.
Back with Norman Gilliland. Our guests are conductor Joseph Mekovich and director Elise Sandel from the Madison Opera. And we're talking about the production of Don Giovanni by Mozart, which will be at the Overture Center April 26th and 28th. Well, what do you think we will come away thinking of our title character, Don Giovanni? Will we be charmed by this bad boy or repulsed by him or both?
I hope both.
I hope, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's definitely got the charm going on for sure. And, you know, because of the subtitle of the opera and because of the tradition of the Don Juan legend and everything, everybody knows what's going to happen on the end. But the hope is that everybody enjoys the ride on the way down.
So. Well, is there any way that being charmed by this character and enjoying the ride is a bit disturbing? I mean, are we to enjoy watching someone recount all kinds of episodes of seduction and abuse and rape and murder?
You know, it's sort of like when people want to look at, you know, I mean, people love reliving any story of bad, of wrongdoing, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, as 21st century audience members, I think there's a addiction to reality television where we like to watch train wrecks happen. And this literally is watching a train wreck happen. You know, we know what's going to happen to this guy. But, you know, our wonderful Don Giovanni here, Kelly Markgraf, you know, has this wonderful element of the way he moves on stage, his gorgeous singing, the way he looks. I mean, he's a very sensual man, and that definitely is going to speak in the theater.
He's positively magnetic, and in fact, the whole cast is so magnetic that you can't wait to see how their relationships play out against one another, and you can't wait to see what's going to happen to Don Avina and Don Ottavio. And, you know, these two characters, it's fun to imagine what's going to happen to them in the next year after the opera ends. And it's fun to watch what Don Giovanni does and his effect on them and his effect on all the other characters as well. One of the great things about Don Giovanni is everybody loves being around him. Everybody loves the experience of being seduced by him. They love the parties he throws. They love the journey that he takes them on. It's just that he always crosses the line a little bit too far. And that's sort of what his downfall is. And that's the part where you enjoy going up to that line. But then once you're over, you can kind of look back at yourself and say, whoa.
In Act Two, what's a highlight of Don Giovanni's singing?
Well, I mean, we get to hear a wonderful canzonetta that's accompanied by the mandolin and the orchestra here that really showcases a completely different side of him musically. It's a very intimate piece, but it also is another seduction, but it's a completely different color and a different side you get to see to the character.
And so this is where Don Giovanni is actually, the character is playing the mandolin and serenading.
Yeah, I mean, you won't see our Don Giovanni playing the mandolin on stage, mostly because what we're really choosing to focus on in this number in our production is the seduction part of it, the honesty, the seduction, and the sort of gentleness and charm and also underlying aggression all sort of mixed together. So we're focusing on that, and we're letting the mandolin get taken care of in the
by mandolin player.
And here we go.
Lasciati almeno darmi
So it's a very tender sounding Don Giovanni in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He sucks them right in.
he manages to make a real conquest in some ways of Donna Elvira, does he not?
He really does. You know, I think she's the character who really she's in love with him. Mm-hmm. She just can't help herself. You know, he wrongs her. She knows he has a catalog of 2,039 women, and she can't help herself. She still wants him back. And then, you know, even after he betrays her repeatedly, she can't help but want to help him change his life and maybe try and help him see what would be possible, a whole different life for himself.
Sounds very modern to me. I mean, psychology, you run into it every day.
Mm-hmm. She's really just, you know, so in love with him. It's just this faith that's unending. And so her aria, Mitra di quell'alma ingrata, is sort of, it's her own version of her mad scene where she talks about, he betrayed me, but I still wish I could help him. I still feel pity for him.
Felicity Lott as Donna Elvira in Don Giovanni. And as you said, Elise, it's amazing how beautiful a song can sound when somebody's singing about such unhappiness and misery that we've seen the last couple of hours in this opera. What about the key? You hear occasionally, Joe, about Mozart and the key of D minor, which is the key of this opera.
Yeah, well, you know, composers of this time, when they were studying counterpoint and studying harmony, there are different sounds, C major, E major, D minor, D major, that are attributed to different emotions. So Mozart and his contemporaries subscribed to this and it implemented it. So here we have D minor, which is the hellish, the evil key that is known. And so he uses this in Don Giovanni. It's the very first thing you hear in the evening, the opening chords, the call to hell. So that's,
I think the Requiem's in D minor too.
Yep, absolutely. This is sort of the recipe that they use from putting things together. I mean, Mozart, I wish he would have lived so much longer. And I mean, I'm sure he'd have been so prolific even after many more years, because he had this recipe for opera, these operatic conventions where you open up with a musical number involving two or three singers. You have arias to explain how they feel. The first act finale always starts with two singers and then more come in and sections. And, you know, he had this recipe to put it together, and keys were a part of it. Most definitely, keys were definitely a part of it.
on your website, you bill this opera as having murder, seduction, eternal damnation, and other secrets of the night.
Yeah, that's opera, baby. That's opera.
But you also said there's humor. What's funny about this opera?
Well, I think actually even the most tragic characters have a little bit of humor in them, and it's part of what runs through all of us as humans at our core. I mean, Don Giovanni has all these things, murder and seduction, and we just talked about the D minor thing. Mm-hmm. But there's also so much joy in this opera. There's joy in that Don Giovanni takes in connecting with another person, and that's something that we can all relate to. There's a certain joy in his idea that he can find something to love about all these different women. It's not just about betraying them for him. In fact, that's not what it is at all. It's about loving all of them in that moment. Consequences he's not so good at, but we feel that joy, and we feel this joy in between Zerlina and Mazzetto, and we feel sort of the comedy of two people starting out on a relationship together and getting to know one another and making mistakes and finding their way back to each other. And, you know, Mazzetto loves Zerlina so much that he wants to avenge her honor in his own way. And, you know, he ends up getting beat up in the process, and her reaction to that is, those are bits of humor that every person can relate to.
And the character Leporello really is, can really be translated into a comic character.
Servants are so useful that way, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, this gentleman's more empowered. I mean, he's more of a thinker than just the comic side. But, I mean, he does have some moments of levity.
Yeah, without getting too specific, the supernatural ending of this, I mean, you could view that as comic or tragic, couldn't you?
I hope it freaks everybody
it
out and that it freaks out Don Giovanni, definitely.
I do too.
You know, here we also have this guy with this existential dread who has to confront his own mortality as well. And so there's that, you know, what have you done with your life? What is it all for? And then he gets sucked to hell, so we don't get to answer that question. Or maybe we do get to answer it.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing to show the flames?
I don't want to give away all our secrets.
All right. So it's just more secrets.
But there are some.
Some secrets.
There are some. And there's going to be lots of action. And, of course, don't forget the sword fight between Don Giovanni and the Commendatore and all kinds of visuals. And I think I'd have to say, from the sound of it, two special effects.
Just a few.
In this upcoming production of Mozart's Don Giovanni, it's Madison Opera, April 26th and 28th at the Overture Center in Madison. Our guests have been the conductor of the orchestra, Joe Mekovich, and also the stage director, Elise Sundahl. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Norman Gilliland with Emily Auerbach, and I hope you can join us for the next hour of University of the Year.